Hi, it's Paul Camilos. Welcome to Series 6 of Shooting the Breeze. Join me and my co-host Jacinta Govind alongside the STB crew as we cover women's hoops and women in hoops. We'll share conversations and get a little deeper with inspiring players, amazing coaches, and the legends from behind the scenes. Especially in this series, we'll be talking to dream chasers that give it their all and lead with their heart.
You know, packed out copper box, just the noise, it was so loud. I've never been to a game that was that loud. And just the support, there were so many kids, so many families. There was teams went down there. There was 9 of the 11 WBBL teams down there to support the Lions, you know, a team that just beat everybody. Still want to come out there and support them for because it's for women's basketball in the UK.
We're grateful to have STB pod regular Cassie B return to the pod. She's recently been awarded for her volunteer efforts for WBBL team, the Manchester Giants, in her role as a commentator for women's British basketball. In this episode, Kaz takes us courtside in this evocative retelling of a fairy tale ending for the London Lions in their Euro Cup victory. A historic victory that, in her words, is the biggest thing that's ever happened in British basketball, women's or men's, full stop. It's an incredible moment for women's basketball, with packed stadiums and global viewership like never before. But it's bittersweet for some teams that continue to grapple with the necessary level of investment required to match the appetite of fans. We talk about that paradox as currently the Lions will not play in the European League next year to defend their title. We certainly know that for many hoops fans, they will remember the London Lions Euro Cup victory in 2024. Enjoy. Welcome to Shooting the Breeze. And we've got a special guest joining myself and Jacinta tonight. It's Cassie B, all the way from the UK. Kaz, good to have you back on the show. What's been happening for you?
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be back with you guys. It's always such a fun conversation to have. So I'm really glad that we could make this happen and fit it into our hectic schedules. For me, it's just been a whirlwind of a season. I feel like it's been the longest and the quickest season that's ever happened at the same time. I've just been so busy. There's been a lot going on. I've been doing my commentary for 5 teams, I think, I have on the go. And in between that, trying to write for Focus Hoops, write some articles, get some interviews done, and watching that, I'm sure we'll get into this, but going down as a fan to watch the London Lions in the Euro Cup final.
Oh, yeah, we'll definitely get into that one later on. So you said you're doing commentary for 5 teams now?
Yeah.
How did you manage to score that one?
I just keep saying yes. I'm like, yeah, I'll do this. And for some of them, I'm like, I just turn up. I'm like, I'm going to do this for you. I'm doing the league, the Women's British Basketball League. That's their new rebranded name. For ease, I'm just going to call it the WBBL because it's a mouthful. So the WBBL, Manchester Giants, been doing the season 4, and we have the Division 1 Mystics, the Division 2 Manchester Magic, which is the men's team, which I've tried to do as many as I can this season. And I have a couple of wheelchair teams, the Premier Division and Division 2 Revolution wheelchair teams. So it's hectic. I'm such a big proponent of we need to promote the players, we need to promote the league, we need to promote these games. And if I can give up all of my weekends, all of my free time to go and stream games, do commentary for them, I like to think it's worth it to do that and just push the quality of play that we've got and the players that we've got in this league just to as many people as can see it on a stream.
And you were saying that they've rebranded the league. There seems to be a lot going on with the UK in basketball at the moment. Do you want to give us a bit of a rundown of what's been happening across the board?
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, there was an investment into the British Basketball League is the top tier league for men and women. And the women's side is obviously the Women's British Basketball League, but they come under the same umbrella. And there was an investment into the BBL by a company called 777, who owned the London Lions and put some money into the league as well. And since then, the league have used a lot of the the funding to kind of up the broadcast experience. So this is for the men's side. Sorry, I'm talking here. They've used the investment to, you know, improve quality of broadcasts. They have a central commentary location, so the commentators for the games will be doing it remotely in London and feeding it to the streams. And they've put a lot into the promotion and kind of just improving the quality of the league. It hasn't, I don't know how it's split for the women's side, but it doesn't have the same. The women's side don't get the same. It doesn't have the central broadcast. There's women's teams that don't even have streams for some of the games. But that's the investment that's kind of been able to push things up a bit. So it's been a really interesting, both the men's and women's games. They've got London. We know London are the team with the money, and they've been able to get players. They've got players like Sam Decker, who brings a lot of his fan following from the States, and they've been working with TV companies in, you don't call it that. They've got broadcast deals with stations in the States to show the BBL games. So they're obviously trying to grow the audience, grow it a bit more internationally. And I think they're using London and the players that they have as well to push that aspect of it. And from everything we've seen that they've put out, you know, it's been successful. They're getting high viewing figures. There's a lot more interactions, a lot more, you see a lot more debate and interest around the games. So it's been a good thing, but it's just not something that appears to have filtered down to the women's league.
I suppose it kind of brings the question, what do they need to do to be able to try and build the women's game, given it's British basketball?
Yeah, so I'm not sure how they, like what the agreement was, whether we'll put X amount of money into the men's game and X amount of money into the women's game, or if it was just, it's, I don't know, 99% to 1%. I don't know the agreement around what that was. But I think sharing some of that same plan that you have for the men's game and just implement it to the women's game, because you've seen the crowds build. We had a doubleheader yesterday for the Manchester Giants women's and men's games to give to the women's game, and we had a really good crowd. And I think there needs to be a bit more collaboration like that when we've had double headers. I think we've had three so far this season. We're getting people in, because I think it's the awareness that people are lacking in the women's game. And when you have clubs, we have a few clubs that are linked, like the Manchester Giants. So this season, sorry, I'm going back a bit. This season, the Manchester Mystics rebranded to the Manchester Giants in the WBBL. So they came under the umbrella of the men's team, which allowed for more promotion. And it's a similar thing in Newcastle, the Newcastle Eagles, the Caledonia Gladiators, and the London Lions. And I think when teams have that link with a men's team or junior teams, academy programs, it helps push a bit more. And I think if the funding's going to men's teams in that sense, it can help when you have that link, because all it takes is for them to go, look, we've got a doubleheader, or there's a women's team that exists, you know, under the same name.
So even despite especially the last 2 years, very consistently and historically, which we'll talk about a bit later, how successful the women's team were for the London Lions. So despite that, they still didn't receive the same level of promotion and marketing for this most recent season compared to the men's. Is that right?
So I think London is probably the outlier in that the women, you do see the adverts, you see the come to the games and stuff, but their promotion is probably one of the more successful ones or one of the better ones, but it's still not, it doesn't appear to be the equivalent of the men's, it seems to be. I don't have Temi Fagbenley London Lions jersey, but you can get a Sam Decker one for the men's. Just little bits like that.
And even like Sam Decker, I mean, sure, I am not the biggest, I don't know as much about men's basketball as I do women's, but what you described before, how they're using Sam's connection to the States and using that opportunity to get some broadcasting deals. I mean, you had Carly Samuelson, who's not only played in Australia, but she is a current WNBA player, and she did play for Team GB in the past. So she has those similar pathways to the international market as Sam Decker, and I would argue that in the basketball space she would perhaps have a broader scope given she's a WNBA player.
Absolutely, and Megan Gustafson as well. So she went to Iowa. I think the records that Caitlin Clark's been breaking at Iowa were Megan's records that she had, and we know how passionate college basketball fans are. And it does feel like it's a connection that hasn't been used as much as it could have been. I know we did a pod a couple of years ago when the Lions had Joe Leadham and Azania Stewart on, and Joe Leadham was speaking just generally, and she was saying she didn't feel like she'd been used as well as she could have been, like put her in schools, get her going, because she was like, we're not going to be around forever. And you have Joe Leadham there, who at the time, that was the biggest coup that British basketball had, to get Joe Leadham back playing in this country for London. And it just wasn't utilised as well as it could have been. And I feel like that has, whilst it's got better, it's still not where it should be. And like you said, that connection, that WNBA connection, you know, we had Shea Petty, like playoff Shea Petty. And there was five WNBA players on the London Lions team from this season. And just the connections. And we know that the women players, they'll play in Europe. So you open up Australia, you open up Europe. And it just, yeah, there should have been more of a push, I think, with the links there. I did see quite a few tweets. So the Vegas Aces posted about the Euro Cup win because they've got Megan on the roster for this season. Washington Mystics did as well for Carly at the end of the season. Sort of wonder if could it have been pushed a bit throughout the season.
It seems like there's a bit of an opportunity that goes begging from the point of view of the London Lions. But the other question is, if the London Lions are getting some traction to whatever level, right, based off the way they're doing their marketing and their advertising, are other clubs trying to follow them in trying to promote the women's game by playing off the men's game?
I think some of them are, yeah. So I know, like I mentioned, with the double headers that we've had in Manchester, that's definitely been really beneficial for the women's team. The crowds, that, you know, they've had, I don't know, figures, I'm trying to look, we've had like probably 300 or so people at some games, maybe, when it's been a double header compared to last season. And there was a very low number of fans, probably less than 40 or so at games. So it's been a massive increase on the people who have been coming to see. And when I've spoken to people, they just said, we just didn't know there was a team here. We didn't know there was a women's team. We didn't know there was a game and things like that. But I think the problem some of the clubs have here is, whilst it's the highest league, like pay isn't published or anything or things like that. But I mean, I do my commentary and streaming in a voluntary capacity. And I imagine I'm not the only person working with teams doing things in a voluntary capacity. And if you're trying to promote things, and you've also got a full-time job, I don't know if they have dedicated people that work in that role. It can be difficult. So I think it depends on what resources each club have, and some have more available and university connections and things than others. So Caledonia, for example, they've done a really, really good job this season. They've got a new venue. They were in Euro Cup this year as well. And they're really building a great foundation. And so some of their content they've had out and some of the promotion they've had out has been really good, and really funny bits as well, little clips and things. So I think it really just depends on what resources are available, and because it's not standard across the board, it's very up and down.
But overall, do you think there's been an improvement this year to last year across the board for women's basketball in the UK?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, yeah. And I do think London has been a push with that. I think London has brought an awareness to women's basketball in the UK, and that's only beneficial for the league, whilst they brought the attention at the European. And seeing the growth of teams like Caledonia, who now have their own venue, Newcastle have their own venue, teams being able to do that and push up the quality of play and the standard of play and what they can offer players. And the players that we're getting in the league, like, we've got just fantastic players from that have played internationally, players that have been out in Australia. There looks to be a lot of crossover between NBL1 and the WBBL this season. And you see, it's a league that's becoming more known. I've had people talk to me about it, you know, from the States, saying, you know, I've heard about the WBBL, I'm really interested in it, when 4 or 5 years ago, you probably wouldn't get that recognition outside the UK, even in the UK at some points.
Yeah, there's been lots of crossover between WBBL and, say, NBL1 level, especially in the last two seasons. I would say that it's nearly almost doubled from last season to this season between the two leagues. Because I think I first started to pay a bit more attention to WBBL, obviously through your social media channels, but especially when I learnt that a lot more Aussies were playing there, and then that helped me learn about other Aussie players. So I remember there was Cass Gould went straight from Davidson to WBBL, and then Georgia, whose last name escapes me, so you might have to help me out. Georgia, I want to say Smith, but that's the musician.
Oh, yeah, no, it is Georgia Smith.
It is Georgia Smith, yeah. So, yeah, Georgia Smith and Grace George played over there.
Yeah.
And you had a couple, I think you had a few Aussies playing for Oakland.
Yes,
at
we
one
did
time,
that.
Between Georgia.
Georgia Grace and Cassidy.
Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of what drew my attention to it first. And then, so that was probably the last season, but the most recent season, even more of a crossover, when some of the imports coming to us in NBL 1 in Maddie Washington and Sydney Hunter, who both played for Maitland Mustangs in East, they then finished their season with us and went over to WBBL. So it's a very, very small basketball world.
It is, definitely. And when I've been making my notes on players this season, because obviously look at where they've played before, there's so many, like Darcy Reese, she's playing for Essex and she was with you guys last season, Maddie Washington as well. And there's just, it's so much, much more. And I think it's great because the league, the seasons fit really well with each other. And just the exposure that playing in both leagues and, you know, the way that NBL, I see so much more about it on social media and everything. And it gets me interested. We were just talking before we recording as well, weren't we, about he's playing for the Salties. She's a WBBL legend over here. And that, you know, that connection makes you more interested in the leagues.
Yeah, definitely. And I'd love to know how she's coping with the climate of Darwin, given that she's a WBBL legend and conditioned to the climate of the UK versus the very hot and humid climate of Darwin.
Probably enjoying it.
But you're completely right. It kind of makes you, maybe she is enjoying it, actually. Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, you're right. That connection of what you know and love at home when they're going overseas, that kind of is your facilitator to a whole other different league and other players and other style of play of basketball. It opens a lot of other doors, and it kind of buys into that idea that's definitely been a consistent trend in basketball in general, say the last 20 years, that people are sometimes more likely to follow players than they are teams. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are a lot of LeBron James fans, but they're not always going to be Lakers fans because they just love LeBron since the start and they'll just follow him wherever he goes. And I feel like it's very easy to do, but it's also, yeah, the great gateway into all these other leagues and brands of basketball.
100%, completely, because if you like a player and you want to watch them and you watch them in the, say, the WNBA season, that's great, but it's only four or five months of the year. You can watch them like 12 months round. You can watch them all year round because they're going to go to another league and they're going to play somewhere else, and you can just watch your favorite player all the time. And it's the player connection. I've been I feel like I've spoken to people about this quite recently. Like, people that watch basketball are going to watch basketball because you love it, but it's the players that make you, like, make that connection and that you keep coming back for the players, the storylines around them. Someone got injured, someone coming back from injury. You know, is someone going to break a record? Like, or they've come from your hometown and they're going to be playing at a top level. It's that connection, and there's so much you can do with it because there's just so much basketball played, especially on the women's side. And they there's so many leagues that we have. I feel like it's less so on the men's side, but it's something that I think it's like that's just waiting to be capitalized on. It's such a huge piece that's been missing. And like, I think the WNBA did a fantastic job this year showing WNBL games on League Pass. I don't know if you could you guys get that in Australia, but you could get it outside. You could watch it. So like, we could watch it in the UK. We can still watch the WNBL games on YouTube, but people in the States could then follow players that they'd watched in the WNBA in the Australian league. And I think that is what it's been crying out for.
Yeah, a little bit overdue, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that goes along with that is that because women don't get paid as much as the men, they have to be constantly playing pretty much year-round. And as a result, they do get the opportunity to be able to bring their fans with them to the different places that they're playing. So UK, Australia, US, and anywhere else that they're playing, which is something that probably isn't as much a thing for men because fundamentally they are getting paid more. So they don't necessarily have the need to be able to be playing in different leagues in different parts of the world.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe with some luck, this will actually pay off longer term to be able to help the women's game grow, just basically because you're getting the fans going around from, you know, following them from league to league.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. And, you know, people want to follow their favourite players and they want to follow where they are. And, you know, if you make it accessible, if it's like putting WNBL games on League Pass, if you make it so people can watch it, they will watch it. And we've seen the basketball figures as well this year. People want to watch women's basketball.
Very much so. That would be a good point, I think, to talk about the Euro Cup, which has just recently completed. And, I mean, that final game was an absolutely amazing game to watch. But I'm really curious to get your perspective on it, you know, London Lions, Euro Cup, going all the way. From the point of view of people in the UK and fans of the women's game, how was it?
It was unreal. Like, it was absolutely incredible. And I sometimes struggle to emphasize just how amazing it was to be at the game, to watch what happened, but just as a bigger thing, how big this was for British basketball. Like, this is the biggest thing that's ever happened in British basketball, women's or men's, full stop. It's the biggest thing that's been achieved. It's incredible. And I think it's hard to explain sometimes, and especially to people outside the basketball community, that you couldn't, this was something, and Temi Fagbenlay said it much better than I will in her post-game interview, but this wasn't something you could even imagine happening. So when you couldn't even dream, you're a kid, like, oh, one day a British team's going to win the Euro Cup. Like, how would that happen? That's not even, what would have to happen for this crazy scenario to occur? You know, you'd have to have, one, a British team in Europe, which until 3 years ago, just, you know, we've had a little bit before in the past, but not to the extent that they're going to be a team that dominate the competition. They lose one game all season and then they win the championship at home. Like, it's just incomprehensible that this is a thing that could have happened. And watching it, being there, watching it, I mean, I've never been more stressed out in my life watching a basketball game. I spent about 39 minutes, 48 seconds just, I couldn't cope. The last 12 seconds, I was like, okay, this is all right. We've got this. And I could finally let myself believe. Being there, watching it, 6,000 fans watching women's basketball in the UK, watching, I think we had 2,000 fans come over from Turkey for Beşiktaş, you know, packed out Copper Box, just the noise. It was so loud. I've never been to a game that was that loud. And just the support, there were so many kids, so many families. There was teams went down there. There was 9 of the 11 WBBL teams down there to support the Lions, you know, a team that just beat everybody, still want to come out there and support them for, because it's for women's basketball in the UK. And the whole game was just, the atmosphere was incredible. The performance out on court from both teams, it's just, it was just amazing. And at the end of the game, there was definitely a lot of people stood around just being like, so I know this is audio, but just like, you have to take a moment and be like, we've just seen that happen. Like, that's just happened in London. And it took so long almost to sink in. Like, we made it to, it made it to the BBC News at 10 headlines, which for anyone outside the UK, News at 10 is, it's the main news channel on the BBC. And it's, you know, all the terrible things going on in the world. And then it's like, it wasn't even in the sports section. It was in the news section, the main headlines. And that's massive for that to happen. And the attention that it got, and it was just, it's just incredible. I feel like I'm still so in awe when I talk about it. I just can't, I can't kind of describe how amazing it was. And just, and to be there for me as a fan of basketball, to be there and to watch it rather than watch it on TV, that's super special to me. I'm never going to forget seeing that. And I'm sure there's thousands of people as well that will say this. It's just a really incredible fairy tale end to the Euro Cup season for them.
I mean, I was watching the game on YouTube, and one of the things that really stood out to me, I mean, just putting the quality of the play aside for a moment, was how much the fans were getting into the game and how much they were getting into the atmosphere around the game, and the London Lions men were there, you know, courtside as well. Yeah. It seemed to be like everybody got together to support the team through this huge event.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what it was. Everywhere you looked, you were like, oh, you know, there's like the Lions men's team, Matt Morgan was on courtside just going absolutely wild. And it was just, it was so great to see all that support and the whole community come together. And just, we went for food before the game, just place opposite the Copper Box. And you just walked around, like literally everybody from the basketball community was in there. Like you were like, oh, there's Dan Clark, there's Matt Clark, there's, you know, there's like Claire Abbott from Oaklands. It was just, everybody was there to support. And it really, it was one of those like magical things that just brought everybody together, because I think everybody involved in that knew what it would mean for them to win. And not only to win, to win on their home court. And it was just really, really special for everybody to come together and, you know, right, like local rivalries aside, or, you know, league rivalries aside, and come together and support. Because the players know each other and they're friends, and they want to come out and support. And it was, yeah, just incredible.
Yeah, because like you said, rivalries aside, I mean, what's happened in the regular season really doesn't matter when you find yourself in a situation where your opposition is on the cusp of making history and you have the opportunity to see it firsthand. All that other stuff doesn't matter. And I'm really impressed, and I'm really, really stoked that the final was like had such a huge, and not just a huge crowd, but a heavily involved and engaged and an active crowd as well, because still a little bit of the pessimist in me sometimes. I mean, we just had our WNBL grand finals not too long ago, and that was still a big game. We still have LJ. I mean, and we still had LJ play at a game in Sydney during our regular WNBL season and try to break the record, and we didn't get it. And, you know, the WNBL grand final, some of the games weren't sold out. So I still have that pessimism in me where even though we know something is great and we should attend, that people just don't go. So I'm glad that the basketball community in the UK didn't miss that opportunity to see that historic win firsthand. The crowd looked wild.
Yeah.
And how you were speaking before, Kaz, like describing what it was like being there and how you felt at the time, would you have preferred to commentate a game like that, or were you happy to watch as a fan?
So this is so funny, because so I went down with the Manchester Giants team, and obviously, you know, I commentate, and I absolutely pride myself on being completely balanced. I don't want to be, I've failed in my job if someone's like, oh, she clearly wants Manchester to win this game. And when I, and because I don't often get to watch games just as a fan and let it all out, I was like, I don't think, I think I need to do commentary on this to keep myself balanced here. Because I, at one point, Dom Allen looked at me and she was like, are you okay? And I was like, I think I'm going to be sick. I don't think I can cope with this. I'm not okay. This is not making me feel well. And, but to watch it as a fan, like, there's commentating, it would have been amazing. Mikey Hansen-Morris, who I know was on we used to do the Focus Hoops podcast with, like, he did an awesome job. And the call he did on Holly's shot was just like, he is going to get sick of hearing himself say that, because it's going to be played forever, but it was perfect. I want to say I enjoyed watching it as a fan. I feel like at the time I didn't, enjoy isn't the word I'd use, but like in hindsight, yes. Like if I'd have known the score and it was all going to be fine. Like, I think I was sat next to Nicolette Fairley, and I don't know if her shoulder will ever be the same again. I was hanging on to it for dear life and just jumping up and down. I think at one point in the fourth quarter with 8 minutes left, I was saying to her, London were down one. I was like, it's over. There's no time left. This is too much. And she's like, what are you talking about? So I feel like having not watched many games as a fan this season, I let it all out in that one. But yeah, and everyone, you feel like everyone was kind of the set. It was just the noise, and I think it helped having such a big, so all the Turkish fans were in like one one corner, and they were loud. So everybody else was like, okay, no, we're going to be louder because this is our home court. You can't come in and make more noise than us. So it was just like that really helped as well. That traveling support was definitely a big boost.
Yeah, I would expect that from any kind of English fan, to be fair, because I know how passionate and how personal football is over there, as the rest of the world knows. So I imagine that the fandom would hopefully, that level of fandom would transfer at least to basketball, at least for the grand final. You can't have the away team out cheer you on your home.
No.
That's not on.
Exactly. I think there was a little bit, and then I think people realised and they were like, no, this isn't, no, we can't have this. And then just drums, noise, banging, shouting. And but just, and for, as you said, for everyone to come out and just get involved in that. And also, so this was on a Wednesday night. This was a 7 p.m. tip on a Wednesday night, which isn't the best time. Really, if you're trying to get, you know, that's kind of, could be getting late if you've got kids that have got school the next day. We traveled down and had to get, so we didn't actually get to stay for the presentation of the trophy because we had to get the last train back up to Manchester. And there'll be people in that situation that maybe had to leave a little bit. And so it wasn't the best time, but the fact that it still was packed down when it was a game that, you know, was maybe a more difficult to get to than it would have been if it was a Saturday afternoon or a Friday evening. I think that speaks volumes.
But also, why your train system stops running after a certain time as well is still beyond me. Because I still remember 2012, I spent a month in London. One of my last days on the trip, I went to Reading Festival and I had to leave.
That's awesome.
And I was staying. Yeah, I went to Reading Festival. It was so good. But I had to make the journey on public transport, right? And so I had to leave.
Oh, no.
I couldn't watch any of the headline acts. I had to leave by a certain time to make sure I got the right trains back in time to get to my accommodation. Because I was flying home the next day, so it wasn't like I could just, you know, willy-nilly camp there or pitch a tent or find a way, because I had to fly home literally the next day. But yeah, it is still beyond me how your trains don't run like after a certain point. It's just a nightmare.
I know. Tell me about it. Yeah, like it's in London. It's the capital. Like, fair enough if it's in, I don't know, somewhere not as huge and an international city, but yeah, it's crazy.
But you got a lot of busy people there.
No, yeah, a lot of people got lots of stuff to do.
Especially for a country that depends on trains so much.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, you can't get anywhere in the UK easily unless you hop on a train.
Yeah, and it's like on the train, it was like just over 2 hours to get back to Manchester. If we'd driven, it would have been 4. So, you know, there's, like, it makes sense to get the train. But, and 10's early for, you know, if you've got to go into a concert, well, you wouldn't have made it. I mean, I guess people would say, well, stay over, but, you know, you've got work the next day because it was a Wednesday night in London.
Yeah.
Guys, we're in a cost of living crisis. We can't just be staying over with them anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
We've got only just enough money for transport to and from the concert and the concert and no more.
I wanted to ask you something about these finals, because the one thing that surprised me was London actually went into this final 7 points down.
Yes.
So, okay, I'm going to ask the really dumb question from the Australian perspective. How the hell does all this work?
No, it's not a dumb question at all, because it's a ridiculous system and it makes no sense. I remember after the first leg, I was speaking to Mary. I sent her a message and she was like, oh, so what happens now? And I'm like, oh, it's an aggregate score. And she's like, what? Why? So basically what happens is, and I think, I believe this is the first time they've done it in the finals. I may be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure this is the first time doing it in the finals. So they have a two-leg finals. They do in the playoffs as well to get to the finals. So it's a aggregate score. Whoever has the most points over the two legs wins the game. So say, for example, London, as we said, they lost the first leg when they were in Turkey by 7 points. If they'd won the second leg in London by 7, we would have had lost. If they'd won the game by 6, they would have lost overall and Besiktas would have had the trophy, which, again, I think some people in the venue would have been like, what on earth is going on? And I understand why we do it like that, because I guess you would probably have the same issue. You book a home and away leg for the games. If you need a game 3 to get venues at short notice is really difficult. So I can understand why it's that. But I've always been of the opinion I would personally rather a one-off than a two-game aggregate. I just feel like, and I've never been to a coach or a player involved in it like this, but I'd really like to know their opinion, because for me, it changes the dynamic of the game. So if you lose that first leg by 20 points, the likelihood of you winning the second by 21, it's minuscule, because how often do you see that in a final when teams are supposed to be matched? You're not likely to get blowouts, even if you do in the first one. So then how do you approach the second game? You have to score more. So you're probably playing differently to how you normally would, because you take more threes because you get the points. And then you get into a situation where you panic. If you're not scoring, you get down. And to me, it just changes the dynamic of it. And I'm not a particular fan of it. I was a fan of it in this case. I didn't need a game three. That's fine. but overall, it's something that the EuroLeague and EuroCup tend to do in, like say, in the playoffs. I've never seen it in a final. And the British League do it in the men's game over here in the BBL. This season, though, they're going to three games, but the women's games over here have always just been one. So that's a very long-winded way of saying, yes, it's an aggregate score over the two legs.
And from a player and coach perspective, one of my lovely friends from back home who recently moved to London, Hamish, who thank you very much also, Kaz, for connecting with him online, because he is there and having a great time but really missing basketball. So that's why I was like, there's a massive game happening that you should probably go to, by the way. But he is a lot more of a current player and coach than myself. He's a really, really good coach. And he hated the aggregated score thing as well. He's like, this is dumb. Why are they doing it like this?
Yeah. Like, because in that first game as well in Turkey, London were down 18, and at that point I was watching it and I was like, this is like to come back from 18 down, it's really difficult. And you have a bad game, fair enough, because everybody has a bad game, but then it bleeds into the front. It's not like you can start fresh, you know. If it's a three game series, you're like, okay, we can put that behind us. As a game, you have to play differently. And yeah, I'd be really interested to see how a coach would say they would approach that game. I don't know whether they'd, you know, give away their secrets before they do, but because it's unusual, and that's the only scenario, like when it's playoffs or when it's a final, it's such a high pressure scenario to do it. And it's not like you get practice in it the league season. It's a very different situation to be in a crucial time.
Yeah, sometimes the training sessions you practice those scenarios where, okay, it's the starting five versus the bench five. Starting five, you're down by seven and you've got the next, say, 7 minutes to play, kind of thing. Those kind of situations. But you don't always practice like, hey, we're going to practice a game where we're already 7 points down from the start. Like, it's just like fractions of time in the game. It's not like you start the whole game down by seven.
Yeah, that was, and I mean, look, it was a good game all the way through, but I think the last 4 minutes were probably four of the most exciting minutes of basketball I've ever seen, right? It seesawed. The Beşiktaş coach was not a happy camper at one point and got himself thrown out of the game.
He was not.
Wasn't in dying seconds or something? Yeah, like,
yeah it, those last 4 minutes.
Yeah.
I think it was like a couple of minutes left in the game.
I made a note, actually. Yeah, two minutes, 7 seconds when the score at that point was level on aggregate, like crucial time.
It can happen in the last 2 minutes too.
Like, how often do we see that? The last 2 minutes of a basketball game. I always think if you tell someone to watch something, tell them to watch the last 2 minutes of a basketball game, because it's – anything can happen. I mean, he was not happy. That's true. Yeah. There was three of the Beşiktaş players ended up fouling out over the course of the game, that's why he was not happy. They lost one of their players in the third. She got five fouls in the third quarter, and then two others late on in the fourth. And I believe the technicals that he got were arguing around the fouls. But I always think it makes me laugh when people argue a foul, because when do you ever see a referee go, oh, no, you're right. I'm going to change my decision.
he got like
I get it.
He got so animated that when he got his second one, he was like well out onto the court and arguing with the ref. And you like you just watching that, you go, yeah, this isn't going to end well for you, buddy.
Yeah. And the 4,000 London fans all going, oh, no, yeah, waving. Let me describe what I'm doing. All just waving, saying, TT, get out of here, get out of here. And that as well, like that moment, because it's little swings and little things that change things. That moment when he was kicked down with the second technical, the crowd erupted as well. And that was definitely a momentum mover as well for the London fans and the team. Because, yeah, so at that point it was level. We were level on aggregate. And it just... So I actually had to watch this back because if you'd asked me after the game, I'd have been like, I have no idea what's just happened. It was such a blur. So I watched it. I mean, I've watched the game back a couple of times now, but we had like with a minute left, London were up one. And then there was a turnover. Holly Winterburn ran back and blocked Dana Evans. But then Dana Evans makes a layup with 30 seconds left. So London are down one. And then Holly Winterburn has just been... I feel like every time I come on this, we talk about Holly, and she is 23 years old. She is the winningest player in the WBBL ever at 23. She's got 11, 12 titles, and she just steps up on the biggest stage each time. She was crucial in that first leg where they were down 18. Second half, she came out. She was like, her and Carly Samuelson together were just like, we are not going down like this. And Holly had 23 points in that game, 5 rebounds, assists. They weren't getting back into that game without Holly. And then in the final, with 12 seconds left, she takes the biggest shot of her career, a 3, and just makes it, shoots over Dana Evans. 12 seconds left and puts them up by 2. And she amazes me every time I see her, and the growth and the trajectories that she's on. She is going to be, I mean, she's already phenomenal. I just, if you imagine what she's going to be like in 8, 9, 10 years time, it's unreal. And she's huge for British ball. But for me as well, for her to take that shot. So you take that shot and you know, if that goes in, awesome. But if you miss, you're down one, there's 12 seconds left. Besiktas probably have the ball. That could be over. And that didn't, you know, and I'm sure as an elite athlete, I don't know if you're going through those scenarios in your head, but she had no fear about stepping up to take that shot. Like she would have, and if it had missed and they'd lost, you know, she'd have, you know, probably thought about the shot forever. But the fact that she just didn't hesitate, the biggest stage, the biggest shot of her long career at such a young age, it's just incredible. And I'm so excited for the future with her and what she's going to do, because she's 23. And when that shot went in, the place erupted. And that was when I allowed myself to believe. So, I was like, sit. Yes. Yes, Holly. Yeah. And then Carly Samuelson intercepts it at the other end. Megan Gustafsson gets 2 free throws to ice it. And just as a game as well, if you want to show someone an example of women's basketball, a fantastic game, it was so back and forth. It's what you want, isn't it? It's what you want as a fan, and you want people to see. Because if it had been lopsided, you know, a game like that, you want the drama, the coach technicals, the players fouling, everyone going crazy, big shots and the big moments. And it was just everything you could have wanted.
It's the stories within the story that make up a game like that. Like it's the story of, you know, who was there watching, the number of the crowd capacity, the competition even between the crowd, hometown hero Holly just putting the team on her back. It's all those little stories that make that giant story. And it's also spontaneous and serendipitous that makes all of those kinds of moments all the more special.
Exactly. That's it. The story within the story. That's exactly what it is. And it's a game, you know, that I'll talk. I mean, people are probably sick of me talking about it now, but like in 10, 15 years, people will still be talking about it. And it'll be like, yeah, we were there. Remember when this happened? And it's just, it is, isn't it? And again, that's that that connection. How can, if that was your first basketball game that you went to, you'd never watched women's basketball before. If that was the first game you went to, there's no way you're not going back to watch another one. Like, you can't not after watching that. And that's got to, it's got to hook you in. And, you know, if that's the first time someone's seen Holly Winterburn play, they're going to be like, who is this woman? She's amazing. Like, I need more of this.
And it's going to be, it's the game, like you said, that everyone's going to remember in 10, 15 years time. But now it's also set a new benchmark for women's basketball in the UK, that this is how good we can be, and instill the hope, I guess, hopefully in the future of like, this is what it can be like here.
Exactly. And as so many people have said, this is what happens when you invest in women's sports, invest in women's basketball. Look what happens. And I know that so players that London have, the WNBA caliber players, like the top talent, Temi Fagbenle playing over here is amazing. Being able to have that and then to have kids see that, young girls and young boys see, you know, hey, I'm in my home city and look, I've just brought a European championship to my home city. You can follow their careers. You can see, you know, she's an advocate. And when you can see that, that opens up pathways for people. You've got players on that squad like Savannah Wilkinson and Shanice Beckford-Norton. And you can see that's a path you can follow. It opens up that opportunity for people. And people, you say that you've got to see it to be able to know that you can do it. It's, if there's no visibility, it's hard for people to even dream about it. And I just think it's put it on the map for people. Holly's spoken about how they're signing autographs and things for people after the game. It's not just young girls, it's young boys as well. And young boys seeing from a young age that, yeah, women's sports is just as accessible and just as exciting as men's sports. And it's not something that's, you know, oh, there's just a women's game on. Like, as they grow up, normalizing that and supporting that. And, you know, Temi's talked as well about they were stood for 45 minutes after games, like signing autographs. The demand is there. And you see players going out to some schools and things with and coaching kids at camps, and having that a player of that caliber there come into a camp, and you can see that, and they're teaching you and they're teaching you what they've done. That's huge, because as much as maybe it shouldn't always be a reliance on a big name, If I was at school and a WNBA player came to my school at the time and was like, oh, I'm going to coach basketball, blow my mind. That's crazy. It's just making it accessible and showing people that that's a pathway, and especially young people, that they can see that, you know, this is what could be if we invest and we do things in the right way.
And that was one of the things that really impressed me in when they were doing crowd shots at that game. The number of young kids who were in the audience, and they were, you could tell, they were really getting into the game. And it was, like you said, girls, boys, they were all getting into it. And that was a level of enthusiasm that you don't often see at women's games.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we saw it as well with we saw it over here. I don't know if you guys did it as with yours when the Lionesses won the Euros? Yeah, Euros in 2022, in the football. There was such a buzz and there was such support from young girls and young boys in the crowd, and a boost for people wanting to get involved in it. And because they're the next generation, aren't they? They have to be involved to grow, because this generation aren't going to be here to be passed down, and they need to be able to see the benefits of it and have those opportunities and normalize it, and, you know, join the support, get the merchandise you want to. And this is where, as well, I think they've missed a trick, because you've got loads of kids out there who wouldn't want a Holly Winterburn jersey after that game. Like, you know, or even a T-shirt with her name on the back is little things like that. And you then take it, you know, in 20 years' time, here's my original Holly Winterburn jersey from the amazing Eurocup game. Little bits like that where you're getting people involved and it's working well, but you could just do this here that maybe hasn't been utilized as well as it could have been.
I'll make you a deal, Kaz. I'll trade you a Darwin Salties jersey for a London Lion Holly Winterburn jersey.
That's it.
Anytime that Holly Winterburn comes up on my social media feeds, I always read her name in your voice.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, you're running the commentary in my WBBL like, feed. Yeah.
And I'm going, she's 23, she's 22.
Oh, I can't believe that she's only 23. That blows my mind. Like, her IQ and her skill set already is incredible. But unfortunately, after all the wonderful things that you've just mentioned about how important the league is at a point, the London Lions women's team is, the historic win, the rug's completely now going to be pulled from under them because I've read reports that the funding now for that team is going to be pulled. And Holly Winterburn has openly said that she, you know, as much as she wants to come back and play for London Lions again, she won't be able to because it's just not financially sustainable for her. So what is going to happen now, A, with the team, and B, with someone, a hometown hero like Holly Winterburn?
Yeah, that is, it sucks. It sucks. So as you said, yeah, 777 have said they're going to focus on domestic competition. The team won't be in Europe next year. And as you said, because of that, players won't be back. So Temi and Gustafsson, there was an article, she said she had left the door open, but without the funding, you can't have players of that calibre. It's not sustainable. They can't be playing, taking massive pay cuts, because they'll get offers from everywhere else in the world. And it's such a shame just after everything they've achieved. But I would imagine next year, so from the release that they put out, I was trying to find it just before we came on, just to get the exact wording, but it was essentially that they want to build at a grassroots level, make a sustainable domestic club, sorry, and their aim is to get back into Europe. But there was obviously no time frame on that. And if you are starting from a grassroots level, that's a very, very long-term plan to get back into Europe because you're essentially going to go back to where it was before that. So, yeah, I imagine it will be a very, very different look for the London Lions next season. I mean, there's always, I guess, a chance that maybe the decision is reversed. I don't know how likely that is. Stella Caltzidi, the coach of London, said in a post-game press conference, she was saying, because that they've been aware of this, said that, yes, whilst that's the situation, she just hopes that this moment isn't lost in British basketball. It's at least used for something. It's not just, oh, this happened. Maybe, you know, it's still there to be able to build on. But we do have the Caledonia Gladiators. So they were in EuroCup this year. They haven't announced to compete in that next year, but it is a real shame. I mean, that's not the word I want to use. That's the word I will use. But it's going to look very different, I think, next year. And it's tough. It's tough. And the players have to do what's best for themselves. And even in the women's game, we know as well that the pay, you know, it's still not comparative to the men's. So it's unrealistic to expect the players of that caliber to stay somewhere where they can't be paid.
I find it kind of surprising because, like, we're talking about London. London is a major commercial and financial centre. This is the local team. They've just walked away with the Euro Cup. And surely there must be some organisation or several organisations who can see the opportunity in building off what's happened this year.
Right, exactly. No, it baffles me that that's not the case, or it doesn't appear to be the case, because surely there is. Like, London's, everything you've just said is 100% spot on. It's crazy to me that that is the situation. And you wonder if maybe this attention that the Euro Cup win has got them opens people's eyes that weren't previously aware that this is a possibility. So maybe something may come of that, and maybe someone can come in. I don't know how that would work with 777 being the current owners. But yeah, London is it's a huge hub, isn't it? And the men's team will still be in Europe next year, just to add on to that. It will just be the women's team that aren't in Europe. So I hope something can be done, but at the moment, we've not seen anything updated since those reports have come out. When it did get on the BBC and the articles, all the articles I've seen around it have mentioned that side of it, that the funding means they won't be next year. I think that's a really good thing that the media have done a good job on report. They haven't just said, oh, they've won, this is cool. They've put the caveat on, you know, so hopefully that brings awareness to it. And again, it's another challenge, isn't it, in women's sports that you see. And it's just another one of those things that you've achieved the best thing that's ever happened here. But no, you can't defend your title. No, you can't go maybe try qualify for EuroLeague. It's not gonna be there for you next year. It's just a real shame.
Well, it makes me wonder what 777's priority is, because if they're in the business of owning sporting teams and promoting those sporting teams, right, surely they must have connections with potential sponsors out there who could assist, so that it's not just them funding the entire program. There are sponsors, there are people who, and it does, you know, okay, you have your main sponsor and you'll have multiple other sponsors. I'm stunned. Of all the cities on the planet, London's the one where I'm sitting back going, really?
Yeah, I'm completely with you. And I think a lot of people here would be on the same page as you there. It's, yeah, I don't know what department they have working on it, whether they have a dedicated person to it. You'd hope they do. But yeah, you wouldn't, because local teams have sponsors and local teams have, you know, we have a men's team in D1 here, sponsored by McDonald's, one of the franchises. And, you know, that's huge. It's McDonald's. And yeah, to just reach out in London, it doesn't seem like it should be so difficult. I don't know why it is or seems to be. And especially like it's women. No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, even if just a company just jumps on the bandwagon in the wave of the increasing popularity on the back of the NCAA March Madness, there's got to be someone from some marketing firm or the marketing department from some big company in London was like, oh, hey, let's jump on this because it's happening in our backyard as well. It's not just happening with the NCAA. It's happening actually right down the road.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And just the boost in women's sports at the moment as well. It's a, you know, it's a no-brainer to get involved and do it. Like, and London, you get, because it's so international, you get so many people there. You've got tourists, you're going to get tourists coming to get it's and make people know that it's there. But yeah, jump on the, even if it's jumping on the bandwagon, you know, no one's going to be mad about that because you can capitalize on it. It's, yeah, honestly, it's baffling. And I wish I had an answer or knew, or I don't know, maybe would it make me annoyed if I actually knew maybe what was going on?
Sometimes ignorance is bliss.
Yeah, that one just that really, really stuns me because it makes no sense.
It really doesn't. It really doesn't. Maybe I should start playing the Euro Millions, see if I can win the lottery, and then I'll be like, okay. Oh, yeah, here's the rebranded London Kazzies.
Yeah, the London Kazzies.
Kazzies Cavaliers.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Okay, so Kaz, keeping in mind the fact that you've got a couple of games to get to, you got a call today, I really want to say thanks to you and also thanks, Jacinta, for jumping on for this one. It's been great hearing about the game from someone that was there firsthand. And we're really looking forward to keeping up to date with everything that's happening in the UK in basketball.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me. It's been great to kind of talk you through just my experience of a roller coaster of emotions. And yeah, there's still a lot coming on in the UK. We've got Division One finals coming up. We've still got the WBBL finals in May, wheelchair finals, and then we have a few little bits over the summer. So there's always still something going on, but it also allows us to flip over to you guys and watch NBL One, and we've got the WNBA. With, you know, British and Australian representation out there.
Yep. Okay, Kaz, thanks so much for joining us and can't wait to talk to you again real soon.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you get our latest pod. And we really appreciate if we could get a like and a review so we can extend the reach to more listeners. And don't forget, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn.